From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 825, Managing Teams Sprawl, with guests Erica Telly and John Gruzchek. Recorded Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. We've got two guests today. Erica Telly is a senior product manager on the Microsoft Compliance product team, and she's been here on the show a couple times before when she was an MVP, so clearly she's crossed over. But her focus is on information governance and records management and listening to customers and partners to make their solutions better. And our other guest is John Gruzchek, who is a product manager for Microsoft, looking after team security, compliance, and governance. And prior to working in product management, he spent time in the consulting side of things, working with global organizations deploying Microsoft 365. So you've both spent time in the field, and I'm glad you're inside now, helping all of us live with Teams too. Because sometimes there's a challenge there. Let's say hi to Erica first so we get the voices straight. Hi, Erica.
Hey.
Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is always the highlight of my year, so I appreciate it.
I'm flattered. And John?
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me, and super excited to talk about these governance discussions.
Let's start with the fact that team sprawl isn't bad. Like, I use the term in the title, but how do sprawl sounds bad, and I don't know that it is. How do you approach this?
Yeah, so I'll take a first stab, and Erica, we've done this session together or talked this talk a few different times, so we'll bounce back and forth. But I'd agree with you, Richard. I think sprawl typically has a negative connotation to it, but in a good sense, like, you do want products to sprawl so people use them. It's about controlling or feeling like you have control over the sprawl, which is the important part. And that means having, you know, the levers and tools and all this stuff to make sure you feel like as it expands out, the usage is controlled and it's monitored in a good way that you don't have to worry about data leakage and stuff like that. So
I also feel like if you lock down from the outset, you probably overdo it and people just don't use it. Like, that's certainly, there's no sprawl because there's nobody there.
It is true. And of course, we know that typically end users like to play around with things, and Teams is a large client that has a lot to do. So if you completely lock it down, I would agree that you are likely to see something we don't like and called shadow IT, and folks will start to use other apps that they like better because right. The one they're being sanctioned to use is too restrictive.
Yeah, fair. The term I've used is you got to let the puppy run, just don't let the puppy throw up.
But love that.
Yeah. It's just, it's like you got to give some room for people to explore, to try things. And then in some ways, you want them to ask you to rein in the sprawl too. We're at a point where it's like, I can't find the team I want to use. I guess that's a question then is like, what does sprawl look like in Teams? When do you know you're sprawling?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's when people there starts to be enough usage that people start to worry about what they don't know
right.
about what's in there. What it kind of information is being stored that should be managed through security and compliance policies. They're afraid more of the unknown of what could be in right. there. Then that is the time to maybe start thinking about a governance approach to Teams.
Which means taking all the fun out of it.
No, actually. It just means applying for IT and the compliance and security personnel to start putting some governance, some automated policies that happen behind the scenes that end users don't even have to know about. There are some options there.
All right. So I'm at a place then where I've got a bunch of, at least some group of folks that are using the product enough that they're now, I'm getting tickets about having struggling to find things, or am I in the right group, or there's too many groups? Like, this sounds like the kind of friction you get when things are sprawled a bit.
Yeah, you certainly can. So I would echo Erica. Governance is fun. It's also fun to control those things from the IT side. And that's where I used to sit in consulting. So I think, you know, some of the most important things in basic governance too is, around access control, right? We have this awesome work from anywhere, any device mentality. We had that very much in the field. When I was a field worker, I'd travel and, you know, be on devices and all this stuff. And I just want to access my files. So I think, you know, really basic things around the governance side are things like multi-factor auth and some of the Azure Active Directory stuff that maybe isn't as related to Teams as we like to think. But of course, those are key areas that we can start to limit, intruders or other areas like that. So in my opinion, basic governance starts with controlling access points, even before we start to talk about sprawl and stuff like that. Identity is very important. Microsoft is great in the fact that we have AAD and we use a central unique identity. But you also got to have all those controls. So it's basic things like multi-factor auth, which we drill customers probably too much, but it's the first thing everyone should do. Everyone should have it set up.
You're in the right place for that. You know, part of our conversation towards the end of the year last year was this, hey, have you reviewed your cybersecurity, cyber insurance lately? Because they're putting MFA requirements into cyber insurance. And often the CFO just signed it, not knowing there were requirements on IT for that. So MFA today seems like table stakes. Like if you haven't got this, you're in trouble.
It is. And there's a lot of really cool things that we can start to do with, again, that identity with the Microsoft 365 stack. And so some of the awesome stuff that Erica's team has worked on, we won't go too deep into, but like the automation, being able to have things relate to each other. So we talk sensitivity labels and classifying data, right? Erica's team has done awesome innovations where, I think it's either out now or coming where we can, associate a sensitivity label with retention, right? And so, you know, the idea of work smarter, not necessarily harder, we can have things working for us. And that's, again, relates back to governance of records management and, you know, retention or legal, all this stuff. We want stuff to just work on our behalf. And so that's, I think, real quick, a lot of the really great stuff we have coming out of engineering, in my opinion, is making IT and compliance and security operations teams' lives easier. And that's very important.
So when I think about sensitive material that might show up in Teams, I think about an HR group having a conversation about a challenge around a staff member or even salaries, compensation and things like that. I have heard these situations where people are just not aware that if you haven't put governance down on this, anybody inside an org can pretty much poke into any team. And so HR may have had a conversation where they thought it's just HR that can see this and then suddenly finds out anybody in the organization can see it, including potentially the person in question.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we want to have a layered approach to kind of protecting these things, because it could be HR official site where this is happening, or it could be a one-on-one chat I'm having with my manager where I just need the company credit card really quick. And I shared that credit card information in a chat.
Wow. I didn't even think of that. Now, holy man, of course you would. I'm supposed to use this chat. I'm in the place where I'm supposed to be. It's like, hey, if you want to pick up those things, you want me to order that stuff, just give me your card information. And there it is.
Yep.
Maybe an employee keeps a copy of their passport in their OneDrive in case it gets lost while they're on a business trip. Like there's so many ways that this type of sensitive data is kind of getting sprinkled throughout M365.
Right.
And so definitely access governance, identity governance, making sure roles have access to right teams and information is an important piece of that. But we can also do things like constantly be scanning for sensitive data in Teams and other locations. And when that data pattern of a sensitive type of data is found, we can block it from being shared in a Teams chat. We can apply encryption automatically to a document. There's a lot of options we have there that we can do automatically.
Wow, you could actually sense that I've put my passport into a place that's more visible than it should be and say and flag it?
Yeah, I think like the OCR stuff maybe is coming here pretty quick.
Pushing on the edge, yeah.
Yeah, the OCR for data loss prevention. But if it's in text, certainly.
Yeah, so sensing a credit card number is easy and
yep.
And should immediately raise red flags.
Yeah, I kind of look at things as structured and unstructured data where we have some great machine learning and AI that can recognize credit cards, passport numbers, and in the U.S., like the driver's license number we use in formatting, records for U.S. healthcare keeping and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. The hard part is that unstructured data that is Project Cortana, Project Falcon and this stuff. And so, again, we've started to figure out, okay, we have sensitivity labels, we have tools like communication compliance that can then look for this. And I want to be very keen on this. This is not a, you know, any type of surveillance or stuff like that, as much as it's helping organizations be able to, as Erica said, recognize when sensitive data isn't being governed or classified or protected appropriately. And we can either manually protect that, or if you have some more advanced workloads, you can have automatic, you know, classification or workloads start to come in. So it's not about seeing what employees are doing or talking about. It's making sure that as a company, you aren't having data exposed, and you're also abiding by your global or regulatory requirements on how you should handle that data, right?
Interesting.
So it means not getting fined.
Well, certainly we have industry specifications, but often especially in larger organizations, you have these documents about here is how we're supposed to manage our data, but we rarely have them algorithmically. Like I hear you implying that I should be able to take these documents and render them as expressions of policy in M365 and have the data loss prevention react to that.
Yeah, maybe like we could provide some additional detail about that. Mm-hmm. What we're doing to make this happen is using what are called sensitive information types, which are essentially either regex patterns that are looking for a pattern.
Like a credit card number.
Yeah. And then oftentimes, to make sure we're really finding the match, it'll also look for certain keywords in proximity of the regex pattern. You could also create a sensitive information type using a keyword dictionary or even what's called exact data match. Like if you have a database somewhere with customer numbers and you want to look for that customer number, because then you could use that to find out sensitive data mm-hmm. and look for list of values in a database. There's other options as well. But that's how it's actually looking for this data behind the scenes.
Okay. And I like this, that the upside to algorithmically is, it, I think for the most part, it's just going to be applied evenly. Like if this data appears, I always thought about sensitivity labels as something that an individual was going to have to mark on a conversation. But that's not the case.
It's more than that. There's a manual and automatic side to it. And we've started to expand sensitivity labels into teams as well. So a cool thing you can do with labels, if you've had them set up in your organization, is I can apply a label that I've used before on documents to a team that's created. And that label will automatically enforce that outside guests cannot be a part of that team. So Richard, in this case, let's say you, I, and Erica are working on a top secret, you know, product spec or whatever, and you have a V-dash inside Microsoft, mm-hmm. we throw that sensitivity label to make sure if I go to add someone I'm working with that's not with that Microsoft email address, they will not be able to be added to that team.
Right.
And so we've had a lot of requests to see sensitivity labels expand further into conversations. And I will just share, we hear customers, we are cautious to not cause too much confusion or too many areas that sensitivity labels could overwhelm end users.
Sure.
Because of a very key part of sensitivity labels is understanding what the labels are and when to apply them, right? If you have 30 labels, and we've ironically seen this early at Microsoft.
Wow.
Which one should you apply?
I right? can't and think so, of 30 labels. That's a lot. I'm thinking like three.
Yeah. So it's when you think of large organizations, if you break it down, you know, if finance could have 10 different labels, right?
Wow.
We've seen organizations, and we don't want to tell a customer they're doing it wrong, especially if that works for them. But that is something I would like to share around, you know, sensitivity labels is, and Erica, I'd love your opinion, but start slow. Make sure people understand how to use them,
sure.
when to use them. Otherwise, to your point, Richard, early on is like, if you just have these things, no one's going to use them because they don't know how. And then they aren't. Punish is a strong word, but then they aren't being, you know, told, hey, you should be using these, and then the idea falls apart.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking about an HR label. This HR material is often sensitive, but not all of it. But now I can think two, right? Like there's a promotions class of HR where that's somewhat sensitive information, as opposed to some kind of misbehavior or harassment or something, which I think is a more significant label in a lot of respects. 10 for finance means I've got an overzealous CFO.
Back in my consulting days, I would always encourage, you know, these big war room type tables come together and say, get all your champions from your business groups and let's talk about the labels that you need. What type of data do you care about? Unfortunately, that means legal people in the room too and making sure we're all aligned. But yes, like, and then I'm not kidding. I've been there where we've, you know, written labels on a board and start erasing them off to get to a good amount. But again, you have to make sure people understand what they are, how to use them, and when to use them, or they will not.
It's kind of a healthy process, actually. Do that brainstorming and have too many and then get people all going, wow, that's too many, and then pare them down. The bringing legal into the equation would add a lot of gravity to that.
Yeah, legal compliance officers, people that know, especially if you are can be fined for the data that you're handling. Yeah. And to your point, like regulations, like make sure those people are in the room.
Yeah. It's not just regulated industry. It's easily OSHA if you're in America, and different countries all have sets of rules of that. And goodness knows you're in the EU with GDPR. That's a whole other can of worms. And folks, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects, called 2 Weeks Ready, helps individuals, families, and communities prepare for disasters using smartphones. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. Your donations help support the creation of this life-saving software. Thanks. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. I'm here with Erica and John, and I've ditched their last names because I'm a coward. And we are talking a little bit about managing teams problems, but also just, I think, getting more sophisticated about this. So is it actual content, or is it like a given chat can be flagged as sensitive?
Yeah, you can flag a given chat as having a piece of sensitive data. And then using data loss prevention, you can either warn people, hey, do you really want to send this? This is sensitive. Are you sure? Mm-hmm. And they can override it, or you can just block it completely.
Right. Yeah, I don't think about – when I think about data loss prevention as data leaving the organization or being – I don't think about it as exposure the same way, or even internally. But I guess it's a catch-all for anything that – has some kind of sensitivity to it in some ways or another.
Yeah, and I think of it as data in transit.
Right.
Transit could be outside or it could be within.
Right. Either way. So is this sort of the core aspect of this? Is like we start using labels both manually and automatically. It sounds like a skill that I can build up to. I mean, you've described a fairly sophisticated script with some regex and I guess some Bayesian analysis of proximity and like this could be a job.
Which I should have mentioned, Microsoft has pre-built sensitive information types for you to use. So you don't have to build these yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I should say, this is just what you should do to get started once you start being concerned about team sprawl.
Sure.
It's kind of like the crawl approach. So maybe we could talk a little bit about what to do next, maybe if you're getting a little more mature in your governance.
Mm-hmm. So starting to use labels, we've sort of set out the type of labels we want. Probably a lot of them applied manually. We've taken a couple of the common ones like credit cards and HR stuff that are common across organizations. Like I could see where I'm going to start building these if we're dealing with product code names where it's, you know, secrets and so forth, that we might have to do a little more tuning for that. But what's beyond just labeling?
Provisioning.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, provisioning can be simple, right? Like you still want to enable anyone to create a team whenever they would like, so you're not hindering productivity. But maybe when they do, you might have a forum that asks them a couple questions, like what department is this team for?
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect to store regulated content in it? There, you could customize that form however you want. And then based on the answers to the form, you can automatically classify the site and apply the right sensitivity label, and then even the right retention label to manage the lifecycle of the content in the site to apply better governance.
Yeah, so you get a little automation around that as well. But you know, classically, when I think of team sprawl, the simple thing, it's too many teams. You know, my question number one is, does this team already exist? Because I think it's easier to, I think often it's easier to make one than it is to find one.
Yeah. And I'll say, yeah, like to square one for those customers that might be starting with teams or, kind of reactively threw it out during the pandemic and needs to kind of wane things in now. I will echo what Erica said. There's some really cool automation you could do or forms, depending on how your organization works. I'm like requesting a team, making sure it's a fit. Mm-hmm. We've also seen organizations control it from the top down. There's essentially a champion in each business department or works with IT, that approves it or actually creates it. So, the truth is there's no, I guess, best or worst way to necessarily provision and manage your teams, other than if you're going completely against how your organization has done things previously.
Right.
So when you need to create a new team, it's important to, again, try and not discourage them from creating, making sure you've checked all the other areas. And then, to Erica's point, again, ask some key questions about the data handling, the type of people involved, guests, that type of stuff. Again, depending on how your organization handles those across all workloads, not just teams.
So, I mean, I can restrict so that only certain people can make a team and then, you know, have a process where this is how you request to make a team. But I could also allow anyone to make a team, but you then it needs to be approved before it appears?
You can do, there's like a ton of different splices like that where essentially they can submit a request form and there's, you know, a light or a heavy touch to it.
Mm-hmm. Must be approved before it goes through?
Pretty much. And I think, you know, the other areas of that you can help if you want to have a full open creation is we have some things around expiration policy. And
right.
There's some auto expiration and then there's some regular ones. Essentially, it's just going to send you a reminder and then it will auto deactivate the team. So we've seen that be helpful just for the sake of when IT is busy, they can't be searching through. But I will be kind of hit a pain point. If you are an IT group that does not have E5 or more advanced licensing,
right.
A regular hygiene check should be either monthly or quarterly, scanning through all of your teams, looking through sensitive data. And we have some cool stuff with SharePoint going on that's helping you get better insights into where sensitive content is stored. But very much guest hygiene and just general team hygiene is something we need to be taking a look at.
But you are talking about a manual process that's like, hey, once a month, or once a week, it's somebody's job to do a sweep of new entries. And it's not like you're reading everything, but you're just asking the question.
You really just want to see if new teams were created. Like for me or for Erica, if we saw a new, you know, executive team get created within Microsoft, you might want to understand what type of data is being shared there, who's a part of it, who
right.
can join, who can see. So, you hit a key point there, Richard. It's not what are people doing or talking about. It's just making sure if they're creating new teams, they're following organizational guidelines.
Right. And like you said, the team doesn't already exist. Can I allow them to create a team, but then I pump up a notice somewhere to someone to review that? But of course, you've just described that in the sense of there is a tool for an IT person, someone with appropriate privilege, to say, just show me all the new teams built this week.
Yeah, I think there's some cool, like, power flow stuff that you can start to automate. And we shared some stuff on the Microsoft tech community that mm-hmm. MVPs and outsiders have developed as well, open source, which is always awesome. So again, I think that is an important thing where if you have a new team get created, you can essentially send a bot message in Teams to an IT admin or a business champion that's saying, hey, this team was created, you know, take a look at it, make sure everything's all good.
And I know they keep changing the name here. I think the current name is Power Automate.
Yeah.
He said, correcting the Microsoft employee. Haha.
Power Automate, Power Virtual Agents,
right.
which again is getting really cool stuff. But in general, we can help use bots to not just say, hey, connect with this colleague or order the Starbucks for a colleague. We can say, hey, this team was created. Just take a look at it. And works the same for SharePoint sites.
Right? Yeah.
Like if a new SharePoint site was created, we probably want to know what type of data is being stored in there and how it's being used.
I also appreciate they don't interrupt the person. Let them work. But at least it's flagged. The question is, if we decide, hey, this team already existed, we shouldn't probably do it in here. Is it fairly easy to say this should be merged into this other team or moved over here and we don't lose the work they've done so far?
It's not as easy as probably many folks would like it to be, but we have improved on the ability to, essentially have teams built off of existing SharePoint sites. That was, I think, really the crux of it.
And right.
Erica, I'm interested to see here. That was your pain point on that side too, was always around SharePoint sites. It wasn't actually about Teams, it was SharePoint. So Erica, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons I bring up provisioning, because if we have a provisioning process, we can actually write metadata into what's called the SharePoint site property bag.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a metadata value applied to a SharePoint site. Now, we can use that metadata for many things. We could use it for grouping reports and drilling down into maybe a certain department's team sites to better evaluate those. But we can also use it to automatically apply lifecycle management policies for retention and deletion on all the content in that site. So while it isn't specifically addressing maybe a merged together case, it will help with some of the lifecycle management policies being auto-applied, which then keeps the sprawl a bit more in check.
Right. And you're also, this relationship between Teams and SharePoint, I think, is more ubiquitous than people really understand.
Admittedly, even though I work and represent Teams, I love Teams. SharePoint is very much the files and content that powers it. And so I treat them as together. Anything you're doing with Teams, security, governance, compliance related, you should be doing it to SharePoint. And I'd even wager you're probably doing that with Exchange and Mail and OneDrive and a lot of your other services. And so that's actually one of my pitches is when you think about like managing mobile apps, whatever you're doing for Outlook and OneDrive and SharePoint that might be on someone's phone, you can probably just hit that checkbox for Teams. And that's one of the advantages of Microsoft 365 as a stack. But yes, I see Teams and SharePoint as being synonymous. And again, Mail is different, but they're all data. So we likely can apply the same type of thinking principles across. So we don't have to think too much.
And DLP applies to all of those things. You can put a sensitivity level on an email just as well as you can on a Teams chat.
It actually started all there. The funny thing is Teams is actually a little more challenging because it's real time audio video, whereas Mail is, you know, static and we can, you know, inspect things as we transport or whatever. Teams and all of the video conferencing going on, the challenge is that it's very, very real time. And so to apply some of these security and compliance capabilities took quite a bit of engineering and rethinking.
So we're getting sophistication around a provisioning, putting some automation in place, automating labeling. That's all cool. What goes past provisioning?
Yeah. So now you're kind of getting in the collaboration phase, right? Where people are actually using the site. And so some of it is what we've previously discussed around sensitivity labels, to make sure the right people can access the site, and guests, no guests, et cetera. And then scanning the data constantly for any sensitive information that you want to protect more strictly. But then also, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, like, as part of this provisioning process, you could apply a standard template to Teams or the SharePoint site, which helps people be productive and collaborative because it's the information's presented in a way they're familiar with.
Right. So it all works together. You know, we talked about expiration a fair bit already, but what happens when a chat expires? Like, what are we actually talking about? I presume it's not deleted. Often this stuff needs to be protected. Like, it could be easily part of a legal case or something.
Yeah. So I think that's the first question is the content in this site, the files and the chats and the conversations, something we need to keep for regulatory reasons, company policy, laws, et cetera. Therefore, meaning eventually we might have to discover it for an auditor or for litigation. And if that's the case, Teams does work seamlessly with our retention policies as well as legal holds. Mm-hmm. And anything that happens in terms of the site expiring and being soft deleted, it will always respect retention policies and legal holds.
But if something's expired, is it out of the search now? I mean, one of the reasons we are into these chats is that often this is the source of corporate knowledge, right? How we made a decision. Like, many times I look at deployment channels as just what was the battle we had. Like, so many things that show up that are unique that only having the real-time conversation of how we diagnosed and fixed things can you understand it. So I kind of want that stuff to stick around and be searchable, but also not bury us.
Yeah, I mean, that's today's challenge for any compliance officer is the balance between historical record for purposes of institutional memory is what I'd probably call what you describe, versus legal obligations, risk from over-retaining things and something like popping up that will hurt you later.
Yeah, you're on the other side of regulatory. Like, there are regulations that say this should be deleted at this point. Like, stuff does need to go away too.
Exactly, especially with the increase in privacy regulations, having to deal with personally identifiable information.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're going to get to a place where it's like, that person hasn't been a customer for 10 years. You really shouldn't have their info anymore, you know?
Well, if you have customers in the EU, then when you're done, when it's reached the end of its useful lifetime, you have to delete it.
Yeah.
If you're not using it.
Yeah, yeah. Or have justification for it. Like, it is interesting to just get to that point that all this data has expiration on it.
And I'd also like to chime in there too. Those are all very great points. Why keep data and pay for storing data if you don't have to? And that's another part of it, right? Like, so I think that's a very interesting conversation. And Richard, something else that's new is the fact that we can edit messages after they've been sent. And that's a new challenge. How do we audit that? How do we track that?
Right.
When we share stock earnings or someone got promoted and I have an emoji reaction or whatever, like that could be something that needs to be tracked for certain organizations. So I think there's also been this really interesting increase in what needs to be audited, what needs to be retained based on if it's the US, is it Department of Justice, if you're outside, there are some groups that will tell you, as Eric said, you need to keep this for X point. And after that, you can delete it. But it's interesting as communications, collaboration changes, how much we need to keep track of.
Now I want to search through court filings to see someone argue about the meaning of an emoji in an email.
Oh, it's in there.
This looks like you agreed to it. That's a smiley emoji. Is that your testimony?
Eric, I'm curious to ask you. That's a really interesting thing, though, is like if I said something and I went back and edited my message, that could be misleading and I could be trying to fool someone. So I believe we actually have the ability to, you know, audit that and kind of understand what the original message was. Is that correct?
If the message is under a retention policy or a legal hold, yes.
Okay.
If it wasn't under one of the policies, then we did not keep the original message.
Okay. Because I think that is an interesting challenge that a lot of us in the software industry are coming across is real time being able to edit and change stuff that implies something differently when someone goes back.
But if I could bring it full circle real quick,
mm-hmm.
that's why we want to provision things and identify what sites are more important, because then we're going to start managing with the policies right away. So when stuff like this does come up, we're already covered.
Well, they have an edit log of it. This is what you wrote originally. And then you corrected it this way. And then 9 months later, you changed it again. Like, that's very interesting. That we'd even consider any of that. I mean, in the end, these are just organized electrons. They can be manipulated. But the fact that we would even attempt to log that and try and make that part of the record, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and just to like repeat what John said earlier, this isn't any type of a supervision or surveillance type thing. This is information that's presented anonymously with usernames masked. And it's protecting people's privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only brought up if there's a reason. Like there's a court case where you're a person of interest, or there was some type of potential wrongdoing that needs to be investigated, in which case it still is presented anonymously to the investigator.
Interesting. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll quickly pile on there too, because it brings up an important point, is you should have the correct access governance in place. Not everyone should be able to see things related to compliance and legal. And so that's one of the areas we talk about a lot is the proper roles. And we've really expanded that within the tenant. But managers should not have access into things like that, right? Unless they're a compliance manager. And so that's one area when we talk about some of these products around communication compliance and someone like the workplace analytics stuff, like we are always very clear, you need to have the right roles assigned, because this does include privacy or information. And to your point, Richard, we don't want anyone being able to search through all conversations and see what people are doing.
Yeah.
So it is important to not only have governance in place for your software, but of course the people that are connecting. And so there's things like privileged identity management, where you only have access for certain periods and it's revoked. But that is a very important part of this when you're dealing with sensitive information, is limiting who can actually see that stuff.
Yeah. And granularity of that privilege. It's not just regular user, super user, and super users could do all the things. Like that, more and more, we're finding that's just a problem. And that's very much a problem when we get into the legal side of this information.
Yeah. And it unfortunately means a rogue employee can do damage. And that's something that we want to eliminate as well.
At least be aware when damage happens and have a path of evidence that it did happen and where it came from. I mean, generally speaking, we have to give people scissors if they're working in the space. If they choose to run with them, we can't necessarily stop them, but we need to know they did.
Yeah. And that's in a weird tangent. That's with some of the SIEM tools out there, like Azure Sentinel. That's stuff we can start to use logs for and try and identify. One of the really cool Azure Sentinel things that we can ingest is actually if someone went into a team, exported a mass amount of data, we can customize it. But let's say they took out 5 gigs of data and then left the team, right? Or if they just did that, like I might want to be notified that, to Erica's point, anonymously, there was a user that went into a team, took all the contents of that team and copied it somewhere else. That's a red flag to me.
I'm pretty sure I'd want to know about that. That seems very unusual.
So those are the other, you know, kind of more, much more advanced insights that then we can start to apply when we're talking governance and all this stuff. Yeah. Just again, we want to respect our end users, our employees. We're not trying to infringe on privacy, but there are certain patterns, activities.
You have an obligation as an organization to manage data around the organization and, you know, be responsible for it, right? You also can get into trouble for not managing that data properly, for not maintaining evidence and so on. John, Erica, thank you so much for doing this. It's a really interesting conversation, not just about I have too many different teams, but that when teams gets used, the data becomes consequential and has to be managed properly, like every other data or bits of data in our organization. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This was a great time.
Great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, and we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.